Corinthians chapter 8. I appreciate Brother Grissom covering things Wednesday night when I was gone last week, and Brother Todd this last week. As you know, I came back Sunday to preach because I'm going to be gone again in October for a weekend preaching at Brother Friesen's, and I didn't want to jam two weekends together too close back to back. So appreciate those guys filling for me, and it's good to be off vacation. You come home from vacation, and then everything hits you all at once, and institute is on the horizon, and school is starting, and so on and so forth and so on. So whatever. I need a rest from my rest now because it all jumped back on me when I got home. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. 1 Corinthians chapter 8, been studying here for a while, and spent about 2 or 3 weeks already in 1 Corinthians 8, the issue here being gray areas, questionable things, and how to handle those things. In some ways, I suppose it would be nice if the Lord had just said, short hair comes up to this line, and beyond that, it's long hair. Or modesty comes to this point, and beyond that, it's immodest. And as far as what you can eat everything up to this point, and then beyond that point, it is not right. But there are things that he doesn't do that on. Adultery is always adultery. Lying is always lying. Stealing is always stealing. But there are things that, you know, come in question. You know, how much is too much? You know, how would you define exactly what entertainment a Christian can enjoy? I mean, it's just not easy. I mean, I know guys that drew the line and said, anybody that sits down and watches a football game is of the devil. Well, fine for you. And everybody agrees that nobody should be an absolute bona fide fanatic about it. But, I mean, really, you're going to draw the line there. If you sit down and watch a football game, that makes you essentially demon-possessed. Can that even be, right? So the question becomes, well, what is appropriate entertainment? If I laugh at this joke, but my brother doesn't laugh at it, you know, what is too far with humor, that sort of thing. And bottom line is, you get down through here, and this is dealing with things offered in sacrifice to idols. And while we all have knowledge that the idol is nothing, and therefore you can eat whatever you want to eat, ask God to bless it. It's sanctified by the Word of God in prayer. Still, you do have another issue, and the other issue is how your brother perceives it. So, if, in some cases anyway, if my brother thinks that watching a football game makes me of the devil, then maybe I won't invite him over to watch the football game, because I have to be careful about his conscience. On the other hand, we talked about this last time, if you're not careful, you know, people are sinners, and people can use that stuff against you. And in one case, for instance, let me take you over to Galatians 2 just to remind you of it. Galatians chapter 2. There came a point where Paul would not submit to brethren that had problems with how he was doing something. Talking about in verse 1 of chapter 2, Titus, right? Titus comes, and Titus in verse 3, being a Greek, a Gentile, they tried to get him to get circumcised, and Titus, it says in verse 4, and that because of false brethren unawares brought in, who came in privily to spy out our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us into bondage. That is, somebody using some issue of conviction or whatever against you so that you can be brought to bondage. Okay? Well, verse 6, we did not submit to this for 1 hour. Okay? So there's a case where, oh, brother, I have a problem. You're doing this and I think you should do that. In this case, he said, nope, not even going to listen. Okay? On the other hand, Timothy was circumcised as a testimony. So there you have two cases, pretty much back-to-back, where in one case the guy says, no way, and another case the guy says, yes, I'll yield, because it'll be a help to somebody. So, again, the point becomes, where do you draw the line with that stuff? And I hate to say this, but of all the things that I've struggled with in the ministry, trying to set a standard and set an example, this is one of the things that really drives pastors up the wall is where you draw the line on things, and how you present those lines, if you've drawn them to somebody. I mean, how do you deal with Christmas? Do we just go all out, have the living Christmas tree, put Santa Claus on the roof and all that kind of thing at church, and just invite Santa Claus in fact, on a Friday, and just have all the kids come by and sit in Santa's lap? And do we do that, or do we recognize that there's an issue of Saturnalia and paganism in the issue, and therefore a church like ours, I've set the standard for all, we just don't do much about it. If you want to do something about it, that's fine. But as a church, we don't do much with Christmas. Well, there's lots of folks that are not really happy with how I've done things that way. On the other hand, some of you are real happy with how I've done it. So, but do I think a pastor that has a Christmas tree at church, has a living Christmas tree, the choir do this program or whatever, do I think he's backslidden and apostate? I do not. But it's not easy to draw lines on things sometimes. And for a Christian, you're going to run into stuff like this on modesty, dress, music, conviction stuff. So the issue becomes, sometimes one thing I have to think about is not just myself, what God wants me to do, but in the sense of, what about my brother, right? And that's the lesson of Romans 14. It goes in parallel with 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Now, we've talked about all this before, so that all was in review. Go down to verse 13 and find Paul's conclusion of the matter, but also find another issue we need to deal with just a little bit. Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. Now, Paul there says, on one case, I take you to Galatians again, where he said they were trying to compel Titus, a saved man, trying to minister to Jews, who was a Gentile there, tried to compel him to be circumcised. And he says, we did not yield to them for one hour. They were trying to bring us to bondage. Now, that on one hand versus this case where Paul says, if I make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth. There's a guy going the second mile on something like food to not allow somebody to stumble over something. On the other hand, draws the line at circumcision, and I could point you to some other things. So again, there's going to be some variance of how probably you're going to decide to do a couple things, say, as opposed to your brother or maybe even me or whatever. I'm not going to justify you for lying, for drinking, for cursing, and for watching X-rated movies. Okay? But the point is, there are no rules as such. This is called liberty. Now, keep in mind, liberty is not so you have the latitude to do wrong. You were granted liberty in Jesus Christ so that you could fail in doing right and still have grace to go on and do right. I'm not restricted by the bounds of Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and Numbers under law. I'm not restricted by those things. If I have shrimp tonight, which I doubt I am, if I have shrimp tonight, it's not going to affect anything. I have the liberty to do right without the issue of dietary restrictions. I have the liberty of doing right without worrying about circumcision and Sabbath days and holy days and whether I've made the right sacrifices and all. I have the liberty to do it. Liberty is not so you can do wrong. That's how it's approached today in this day and age. My liberty allows me to drink. After all, I can't be lost again. My liberty allows me to date women that are lost because, after all, I can't lose my salvation. My liberty allows me, essentially, to do what the Bible's against, all in the name of grace and God being merciful and God loving me no matter what I do. That's not right. Liberty is for the purpose of you failing in something as a Christian under law or under some tenets of the Bible and still having a relationship and grace and mercy from God to be able to go on, put it under the blood, and do right. Liberty is supposed to kick you in the backside and give you some fuel to go forward and do right instead of doing wrong. Now, with that said, again, verse 13 is where we pick up. Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. So he's going pretty far, real far, in fact, keep from offending his brother. On the other hand, he draws the line for Titus, and Titus and him decide, for not for 1 hour will we even allow this issue to continue about whether or not Titus should be circumcised. The answer is no, we don't care what you think. Okay, now, where's the balance in all that? Let me talk to you for a little while here about offense. For instance, go first of all to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. Among those who press this matter of liberty in the way that I described it, that is, liberty basically is license to get by with something and do wrong. There's also the idea among some of them, some false issues about offense. In other words, you've ministered, most of you, in public enough amongst your family and all, enough to know that there are people out there, there are Christians out there that will do absolutely anything, basically, to keep from offending somebody. And to offend somebody, lost or saved, is just about the worst thing in the world that you could ever possibly do. As a pastor, I am constantly pressed and pressured, not just by folks listening to me, but by stuff I get in the mail, stuff I get on email, that sort of thing, of folks pressing and pressing and pressing that the preaching's too hard, it's too direct, it's too sharp, it's too incisive. There's too much negativity, there's too much rebuke. You have to labor to not offend people. Okay? Now, offense is a concern, but there should first of all be this. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 8. Notice this issue. Jesus Christ, in verse 8, is a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. Now, Jesus Christ is a rock of offense. If you're going to preach Jesus Christ, if you're going to stand for Jesus Christ, what are you going to be against? You're going to be against people's sins. You're going to have to deal with people about their issue of eternity, which, frankly, most people are going to hell, right? And very few people really are going to heaven. So you have to deal with that. Can somebody get offended over hearing about hell? Well, of course they can. You're going to have to deal with people about their righteousness. They don't have any. All their righteousness is filthy rags. So from the very beginning, while I'm willing to labor to keep my brother, or for that matter, a lost guy, from being unnecessarily offended by my actions or whatever, at the same time, I have to be able to weigh into this equation the fact that Jesus Christ is a rock of offense. From the very start, it's understood that people are going to be offended by what Jesus Christ offers. It is unavoidable, right? So while you factor in, I don't want to offend anybody unnecessarily, at the same time, you can't spend all your time, especially in preaching Christ, about worrying whether somebody's offended. Because if you never say anything that's offensive to somebody, you've never said anything. It's impossible to preach Jesus Christ without saying something offensive to somebody. I'm in the business, by business I mean calling, of dealing with people all the time. And I've become very, very aware that there are some people I can't please, no matter what I do. I'm not talking to anybody in here necessarily. I'm just saying, here a few weeks back, there's a lady in church. Her husband was struggling with getting her in church. He's saved, very much on the same page as us. And she came to church, and as predicted, she got offended. Now he said, Pastor, I talked to him yesterday. He said, Pastor, he said, you went into the wife and husband relationship. He said, I thought it was exactly what she needed, not in the sense that you rebuked her, but in the sense that you held men responsible for treating their wives as they should be treated. She said what she came away with was that, that's what I thought. He's against women. So, you know, I'm just painfully aware that people pretty much hear what they want to hear a lot of times, and frankly, you know, I'm not going to be able to avoid it. If I'm going to preach the truth at all, and especially preach Jesus Christ, it's impossible not to offend somebody. It's impossible. I got another view along that line. Look in Galatians chapter 5. I think I hit this last week. I'm not sure. Galatians 5. No, I didn't. Galatians 5:11. Keep your brother and your, for that matter, lost people's offense in mind with the understanding that you are not going to be able to avoid offending them if you're going to do what you're supposed to do. Now, you can keep from offending them by not doing what you're supposed to do. Somebody sent me a link, YouTube link the other day. There's some guy out there, and I don't know anything about him. He's a middle-aged, heavy-set fella with a ponytail. Apparently some media figure. His name is Penn somebody. Anyway, I guess he's a big blogger or whatever. I don't know if any of you know who I'm talking about at all, but he's an atheist, a publicized atheist, and stands against Christianity and religion and all that. And yet, he was, put up this video of himself, talking into his little camera, his little blog camera, whatever it's called. And he said, I was on the street, and there was this guy that came up to me with a Gideon Bible. And he said, this guy impressed this fella as a good man who was genuinely misled by what religion's supposed to be. But this guy said, I'm usually offended by Christians trying to proselytize me. But if this guy truly believes that I'm going to hell, I surely do want him to try to talk to me about it. Because he said, if the bridge is burning and, there comes a point where I would tackle somebody if I knew the bridge was out. I would tackle somebody to keep them from going over the bridge. He said, this guy came to me, and most folks would have considered it offensive on the street that he would approach me with a Bible and say, I think you need this. Now, this is a lost atheist saying these things. And once in a while you meet somebody like that, I appreciate that because that's the way it is, right? You can't spend all your time being concerned about whether somebody's offended. For instance, do all you can to keep it from happening, but verse 11 of Galatians 5, and I, brethren, if I yet preach circumcision, why do I yet suffer persecution? Then is the offense of the cross ceased. He's saying there, if I don't preach it right, then the offense of the cross has ceased. And he's saying, it's expected that people should be offended by the cross of Jesus Christ. It's expected. It's just the way things are. And so, factor that in when you're talking about being offended. Look in Matthew chapter 16, verse 23. You might factor this in as well. Now, we've probably been over this at one juncture or another, but this is one of those points of brainwashing where the world tries to get to you and convince you that if you cross this line, you've gone too far. But there's something folks don't think about. Matthew chapter 16, verse 23. It's never turned around this way. The Lord Jesus Christ turns to Peter and said unto him, verse 23, get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me. Everybody's worried about whether somebody else is offended or whether I've been offended. What about God being offended? What about you or someone else being offensive to God by what you are, by what you said, by how you act, right? It's funny, that's never argued, isn't it? It's funny that nobody ever gets offended saying, I think God's offended by you. It's always, oh no, you offended me. Oh no, you offended her. I mean, we got to get Titus circumcised or else he'll offend somebody. How about God being offended? Nobody ever thinks about that. Look back in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, where once again it says, it would help if I was back in 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 8:13, while the world standeth, lest I make my brother offend. Now again, you probably expected this. Look in Psalm 119, Psalm 119, 165, it's, folks, we have to deal with once in a while, today, just how thin-skinned people are. I mean, you've now come to a day where I don't use the word nigger for good reason, right? I don't need somebody unnecessarily offended by me using racial slurs. But really, is that the worst thing that you can say in society today? In society, it is. Just about to call somebody a nigger is just about the worst thing anybody could ever possibly say. Now, really, is that true? I mean, are we really come to a point where, I mean, did it ever bother me that somebody called me a big bald honky? No. No. And you say, well, it's not the same. Okay, well, it's not the same, maybe. But maybe it is the same. And maybe you've just been pre-programmed to respond like a dog salivating when the bell is rung, when something's said. Boy, just let the N-word escape somebody's lips and the media just goes completely nuts. Now, are you that much of a cow? Are you that much of an animal where to hear somebody say something, I agree, I don't do it, I don't use it, because you just can't win doing it, okay? And I'm a Southerner, so there was a day in the past that I did. But long time since getting into ministry, I just don't anymore. Look, it's just a battle that has to be fought if you say it, and it's not worth fighting. But I refuse to yield on calling a sodomite a sodomite. I refuse to yield on calling a drunk, and a liar, and a sinner. Okay, I refuse to yield. Now, Psalm 119, again, people are really thin-skinned. And there comes a point where it has to be dealt with. Look in Psalm 119, 165. You know this verse. I believe people that are easily offended not only don't believe the Bible, the Christians that get offended aren't spending time in the Bible. If I spend time in my Bible, I promise you, God has worse things to say about me than you could ever say. Seriously, what the Lord calls me and says about my insides is far worse than most anything you could say. Now, if you defame my character and call me a sodomite or something, okay, then I'm mad. Okay, I'm offended then, and maybe you just punch you in the nose for a while. But as far as just general stuff, the things that people get offended at, you're not going to offend me by saying something bad about me, because God has already said something worse about me. Psalm 119, 165, I keep commenting and haven't even read the scripture yet. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. If you are of a hypersensitive character, you're easily offended, the problem is you've been spending time with the wrong crowd. And I don't want to be mean. I understand that everybody turns on the news probably to be informed a little bit here or there, but those people are out to brainwash you. And they're going to teach you stuff on a continual basis to get you worked up. And when somebody says something biblical, you go, oh, that's too hard. You've been offended because you're spending time with the wrong crowd. You spend much time with Hollywood. The fact is, you're going to be deceived because you're going to like some role that some actor plays in some movie. He's going to be patriotic. He's going to be noble. He's going to be courageous. He's going to be brave. He's going to stand alone. He's going to win. And in real life, the guy is a complete dirtbag. How many folks have fallen for that thing? Boy, how many people thought that Mel Gibson was the greatest guy in the world, the Patriot, the Scottish guy in whatever movie that was, wherever all those men wore kilts and stuff, whatever that was. And he's always presented himself, I mean, he puts out the Passion of the Christ, I mean, he's always presented himself as this super conservative, patriotic, brave, courageous, you know, guy, like, people, Those people are all pretenders. You say, what's an actor? An actor is a pretender. He has no life of his own. He pretends to be something he's not. He makes a living doing it. And, you know, all of us, I've acted in my high school play and all that kind of thing, and okay, there's a place maybe for some of it. But at some point, think about building your life around pretending your whole life through. Then you hit 45 or 50. What are you? You may be crazy as a loon. You may not know how to be genuine and act like yourself. You know, if you're married, how do you conduct yourself with him or her? Do you even know what genuineness is any longer? I think the reason actors have so much problem is because they're crazy. I think they've lived in a false world for so long, pretended in their emotions, pretended in their passions. Many of them have drawn brave, courageous roles in movies, have gained fame for it, so they think they should be brave and courageous in real life, only they're not. They're kind of crazy. They're kind of loopy, loony. They can't stay married. Their children are all wrecks. Why? Because they're pretenders. Now, I'm not sure how I got off on all that, but offensiveness, okay. offensiveness. Look at something else real quick, James 3. I'm presenting you. Jim, did you have something? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Oh, Dr. Laura. To this day, there's still a guy that comes to church once in a while. He reminds me of it. First time he came to church, I've always had this thing. I moved from Texas up to here, and I've always found it humorous that somebody would want to go to college and be called a golden gopher. I mean, what fear that must strike into the hearts of all their opponents. A golden gopher. I mean, Texas Longhorns, okay, but you have grizzlies and lions and bears and tigers and golden gophers. And so I made a comment about that, and it offended this guy. He still reminds me about it once in a while. I think he's got over that. But just to say that, brother, sometimes there's no end to the offense. Look in James chapter 2. And I'm pointing out to you, okay, while he says this in 1 Corinthians 8 about offense and you being careful, but it goes without saying that there are offenses that are unavoidable if you're doing right and saying right and preaching right. It's unavoidable. It's the offense of the cross. It's the cross of Christ. He's the stone of stumbling, the rock of offense. The truth is offensive to people who hate the truth. God is offensive to those that hate God. Once in a while, like I said, this ponytail guy, this blogger, whatever, has some fame in the world. I'm not sure. I'd never heard of him before. But who acknowledged that if this Christian really believed he was going to hell, he at least appreciated the fact that the guy was concerned enough to, in a respectful manner, present him a Bible and ask him to read it. Well, I appreciate that, but you don't meet any like that, right? Look in James 3:2. Now he begins in verse 1, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all." Now that's not a very long statement. But here's James saying, in many things we offend all. Now, how many of you, being saved and now Bible believers, and beyond that, probably many of you, quote-unquote, Ruckmanites, at least to them, how many of you in your family, I'm not talking about your wife and children, how many in your families, as far as your family being mainline Christians or else lost, how many of you can't do anything right in their sight? In many cases, you offend all. No matter what you do, if you're in any way consistent with the Scripture, you can't do you can't do anything right in their sight. We offend all. Brethren, it's unavoidable. Okay? Now, that said, the other side of it, because we are quote-unquote Ruckmanites, and because we are Bible believers, and because the world's against us and we're against the world, and all those sort of things, if you're not careful, then you wind up with an attitude whereby you don't care whether you offend them, and you're willing to offend them unnecessarily. And again, I'm telling you, that's the reason I don't do the nigger thing. Okay? It's because it's not worth the battle. I resent the fact that they can call themselves niggers all they want to. But the moment that a big white, bald-headed honky stands up and says anything about the N-word, you know, it's blogged all over the country instantaneously, okay? I resent that, but the fact of the matter is, it's not worth the battle. It's just a battle I don't have to fight. I don't need to spend the energy trying to justify fighting that battle. And there are things like that that you have to think about. Here is, for instance, Proverbs 18:19. You need to be conscious of not doing something just to offend somebody and just being careless about it, because otherwise you're going to wind up with a rotten reputation, and some of that reputation as a reactionary and as, you know, a brawler might be justified if you're doing it just to do it. Hello, right? I mean, you got to use some wisdom in this thing. Okay, they're too often sensitive. I mean, I call it often sensitivity, where I'm offended by everything. You sneeze wrong, didn't cover your mouth with your right hand, I'm offended. I get, okay? On the other hand, there's offensophobia, where I'm afraid to death of offending somebody. I will do anything to keep from offending my mother. I will do anything to keep from offending you or you or you. I will skip a point in a message just to keep from offending you. Okay? That's offensophobia. That's not right. So you can't be careless about this, but on the other hand, notice Proverbs 18, verse 19. Proverbs 18, 19. A brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. Their contentions are like the bars of a castle. Now, people can be real stupid about stuff, okay? People can be really, really sensitive about things, and they can allow things to go for months and years. And again, once in a while I'm reminded of, like, just Jim, I'd forgotten about his sister, about that even happening. The guy that I said that about, the Golden Gophers, okay? Hopefully he's not too offended anymore, but the fact is, there are things that people imagine me having said that I never said that they're still mad at me about. One time, my wife had a dream that I was approaching her with a dead mouse. I woke up the next morning and she was mad at me, because she dreamed I came at her with a dead mouse. But so Christians are like that sometimes. On the other hand, in a legitimate situation, I mean, the brethren can be offended over stupid stuff, okay? And somebody that's weak and is offended over something stupid should at least be man or woman enough to say, you know, I was stupid. You know, it just wasn't worth all of the, you know, all of the fire and heat that went into this. On the other hand, for your sake, not to be picky, persnickety, and small about things. Again, I remind you, he said, we didn't listen to these guys 1 hour about Titus being circumcised. We would not have him circumcised. You know, I don't care what they think. Okay, there is that. But a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. If you genuinely offend your brother, it's going to be hard for him to get over it. And this thing might go for weeks or months or years. And their contentions are like the bars of a castle. I mean, one of the reasons people say, why do Baptists fight so much? Because Baptists have convictions. They all have Bibles. And they're all coming from a background where they have things in their past. And so the Lord deals with them about things. And beyond that, their brothers and sisters, their family. And when family hurts family, things are hard. So I'm not suggesting to you that your brother or your sister in Christ should be a baby. And sometimes somebody has to have said, you know, just go change your diaper. Brother Gipp is famous for saying, I will put my shoulder under your arm and carry you as far as I have to carry you, but I am not doing your diaper. Now, I always found that to be pretty good. Okay, there comes a point where baby stuff enters in and you got to quit. You know, go change your own pants, because I'm not going to carry you very far stinking like this. Right? Okay, but remember at the same time that if you legitimately and just say unnecessarily offend your brother or sister, I mean, those things usually don't get resolved in a day or a week. It's just true. So, as far as being offensive-minded in the sense of being concerned about whether I offend somebody, be honest and mature about it and realize that there are things that I can do and say that'll hurt somebody that I love and that loves me for a long time. And if they're being a baby about it, they should grow up, okay? But if I've done it unnecessarily, and, you know, if I was out of line, then I need to go try to repair it. Right? Now, along that line, there's more, though. Look in Matthew 17. I'm now looking at the other side of the picture where, okay, there's offenses that come, and if you're going to deal with the truth and with Jesus Christ and the Bible, you're going to offend people whether you like it or not. Just get used to it. On the other hand, don't be flippant about it, okay? On the other hand, there are times and places where you should be concerned and you should not just try to do that. Look in Matthew 17, verse 27. Now, you know this. Matthew 17, 27. Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, Christ talking to Peter about this issue of taxation. Go thou to the sea, cast in a hook, take up the fish that first cometh up. When thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. That take, give unto them for me and thee. Pay your taxes. Okay? I mean, to keep from offending somebody, Jesus Christ said, look, here's the rock of offense now. The one who died on the cross of offense, saying, go do this to guard against offending them. Okay? So, here's the rock of offense telling you to be careful about offending somebody in something you don't have to. I think probably you all know that, but keep going. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. You should go pretty far. Paul said he did in 1 Corinthians 8. You should go pretty far to keep from it. You can't be completely obsessive about it because you deal in offenses every day. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31, still in the context of eating, by the way, whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God, giving none offense, neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church of God. Three divisions of men as God sees them. Lost Jews, lost Gentiles, and the church of God. Those are the only three divisions of people. It's not just lost people and saved people. In God's eyes, it's Jews, Gentiles, church of God. Okay, give none offense to those folks. Now again, you have to wrestle with Christ being the rock of offense and the offense of the cross and all that and preaching the truth, which is offensive. You have to deal with that. But as far as legitimately offending somebody where you don't have to in something unnecessary, don't do that. Don't do it. So, I don't do the N-word. I've trained myself out of it. We grew up calling blacks niggers, okay? I grew up in locker rooms. I was in locker rooms from the time I was in junior high all the way through college, dressing and essentially living every day with blacks. And they called each other niggers, we called them niggers, and we all had a big good time. It's not that way anymore. And so I've trained myself out of using the word. And among other things, just because it's an unnecessary offense that does nothing but cause me trouble. Right? I mean, seriously. Look at another one or two here. Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 6. 2 Corinthians 6. I'm telling you, you can't be obsessive about it, but you should be careful about it. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 1. We then, as workers together with him, beseech you also, you Corinthians, that you receive not the grace of God in vain. For he saith, I have heard thee in a time accepted, and in the day of salvation have I succored thee. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. And that all, verse 2 was all a parenthesis. But notice verse 3, giving no offense in anything that the ministry be not blamed. Now here's Paul, he's an apostle of the Gentiles. Here are the Corinthians who have offended some in some regard because they've really gotten their church in a mess. But giving none offense in anything that the ministry be not blamed. I don't want either lost people or saved people. It always hurts, doesn't it, when somebody leaves church and then you hear bad things about your church that they've said. Right? And that's not what you've experienced to be true at all. It hurts, right? Well, that's the ministry being blamed. Whether or not they were offended legitimately or not is probably the issue. But that's the thing, is usually with regard to offense, what people say is bothering them and offends them. The first thing out of their mouth is usually not the issue. It's almost always the most expedient thing that they can think of to say, and they're going to use that to beat you to death with it. Usually it's something far less legitimate, and sometimes, frankly, it's very small on their own part. Okay? But still, if you can help it, if you can go the second mile to keep Jesus Christ and the ministry from being blamed, you should do so. So I don't use the N-word, among other things. Right? All right. Just one more here, I think. Look in Romans chapter 12. We'll go on, I think, to something else. Romans 12. Like I said, I'm a Bible believer, and as such, you know, I get tired of the world shoving stuff in my face and having stuff crammed down my throat, too. They always claim that for us. We go ram the Bible down people's throats. Well, you don't have to listen. You can keep walking. Most people do. But anytime I turn on the news, anytime I pick up a newspaper, I get stuff rammed down my throat all the time. You think the sodomites aren't ramming their agenda down people's throats? You think that Muslims aren't ramming their agenda down Americans' throats? They certainly are. You think Obama didn't ram his agenda on health care down the average American's throat? He certainly did. So I get tired of getting it rammed down my throat. Here I have a Bible. I read my Bible. It's the voice of God. It's the mind of Christ. And I can get under a head of steam sometimes because I'm tired of being dictated to by liars and by demon-possessed people. And so, you get a head of steam, and you say something and you offend somebody, okay? There's some of that that's legitimate. And just don't take... Remember back when they were enforcing a 55-mile-an-hour rule? I remember they used to put the governor on school buses so that if we were on the way to a football game on the football bus and we were late, you still just had to go 55. Because any time you pass 55, it'd start, the governor on the bus would govern you down, okay? Okay, I get tired of being dictated to by people like that. But you need to put a governor on some of the offensiveness. Because there are things that, there are pastors, but there are Christians that offend others by what they say, how they say it. Sometimes it's just talking too much. Sometimes it can be overzeal. Sometimes it can be youth. Sometimes it can be just stupidity. Sometimes it can be ignorant. Sometimes it can just be being green and immature. But you need to learn to put a lid on some things, because I don't need to be making the field harder to plow than it already is. I mean, I'd like for this guy to get saved as quickly as possible and not set him back 10 years by something I do or say that's unnecessary. If somebody comes in and I have something to say legitimate about the sodomite lifestyle and he gets offended, I'm sorry. And if you get around to the Lord at judgment and say, well, I was ready to get saved, and then Brother Stevens got up there that day and said something about fairies. You think the Lord's going to really stand for that? You think the Lord's going to say, oh, well, you are right, and so we're not going to send you to hell because you were almost saved before Brother Stevens said something about fairies? Well, I got news for you. That's not what's going to happen with God, right? But on the other hand, if somebody can legitimately say, you know, point to misconduct in my ministry and my speech, and misconduct in your person and your church and your conduct, I don't think the Lord's going to give them a reprieve on hell, but it can sure come back to you. Right? See what I'm saying? Look at one more, Romans chapter 12 and verse 18, and this is good, knowing that Paul offended people right and left. They said he was rude in speech. They said his speech, in fact, was contemptible. Now imagine being a pastor and people thinking your speech rude and contemptible. I mean, they despise the speech. Now this is that guy, but he says, verse 17, Romans 12, recompense to no man evil for evil, provide things honest in the sight of all men, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Go the second mile, go the third mile to keep from offending somebody with your food, with what you eat, with what you say, with what jokes you tell. Go the second and third mile. I mean, if you know somebody is really easily offended about something and what you have to say is not central to the truth of the gospel, or the truth that you are called to bear morally and spiritually, then you don't have to say that right there. I don't cut many sermons. By cut it, I mean most of my sermons I have written out, not word for word, but most things that I had contemplated saying, I have written down so that I can be reminded to say them. It is very seldom that I get up and decide I'm not going to say that because so-and-so's here. Okay? Generally, if you start being concerned about one person in the congregation too much, you wind up undermining the whole kit and caboodle. So, you know, I usually say what I have written down, but occasionally somebody comes in that's lost and there was something I had planned to say, and not to cut the gospel, but if that's something that they might stumble over by the grace of God, a lot of times I will cut the message in that matter, okay? Doesn't happen an awful lot. I don't aim at singular people almost ever. My point is that there's a time to be governed by wisdom and prudence, and you have to do that with offensiveness. And again, what you are and what you do, if you're doing right, is offensive to the world. And some things we offend all. You can't win. But you don't have to do so unnecessarily. All right, one comment there, Tom. Go ahead. That was a major thing, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Right. Well.